Hello and welcome to the Influence Change at Work show. I'm your host, Heather Stegel, and I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm coming to you on Blog Talk Radio and YouTube. This show is one of the many ways to help equip individuals and teams to influence change in Eclaria. You can find more episodes like this one, plus additional resources to help you influence change at Eclaria.com. Today, my guest is Dr. Linda Hoops, who also joins me from Metro Atlanta to discuss her new book, Prosilience. Linda is the founder and president of Resilience Alliance, an Atlanta-based company that provides training and tools on resilience, change, and employee well-being. She is the author of Managing Change with Personal Resilience and her new book, Prosilience, Building Your Resilience for a Turbulent World. In her spare time, she is a musician, photographer, and sailor. So, Linda, welcome to the show, or welcome back to the show, because you've been on a couple of times talking about resilience. And so I was curious about this idea of prosilience, and what's the difference between prosilience and resilience?
Okay. Well, I think most of us are familiar with the idea of resilience, about how we recover, bounce back, maybe even grow stronger from the changes and the challenges that we encounter. The idea of prosilience is that we can deliberately develop the capability to do that. We can build our muscles, build our readiness, use life's small challenges to build our preparedness for dealing with the larger ones, which can help us not only deal with them better, but sometimes it can reduce the amount of challenge we face in the first place.
Okay, so it's preparing in advance to be resilient. Is that how you would
exactly? We know that there are some muscles that we can build around resilience, and so it's doing that before we need them.
Okay. So I'm curious, because this show is all about change, and especially for people who are trying, who are in some ways inflicting change on other people. Yes. And so, you know, some changes seem like they're energizing and exciting. Others are draining and difficult. You know, how can we tell which changes are going to be, or, you know, what's the difference between the two? Can we tell by just looking at a change which ones are going to be which way, or how does that work?
That's a great question. So let me just start by saying that you can actually have this exactly the same change and have two people respond to it very differently. One person will see it as energizing and exciting, and another person will see it as dangerous and difficult. So it's not purely something about the change, but what I will say is that we can make some guesses. So the amount of energy that's required. One of the things that that is a big topic in the new book is about how we use our physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual energy to deal with changes. And when a change is going to consume energy than we have, that's one of the things that's going to lead it to seem more dangerous and difficult. If we're feeling depleted, then we have less to give to the change. We also know that our brains perceive threat when we encounter things that feel scary, and most of us in organizations know by now that it's not just physical threats that get our brains going. Threats to status, respect, relationships, all those kinds of things get our brains going, and those can cause us to frame a change as scary and awful, where someone else might see it a different way. And then I would say for change agents, you can't always tell, but you can make some predictions. The more control people have, if people are choosing the change or choosing a path through it, it's going to feel less scary than if we're doing it to them. Yeah. And the level of visibility that people have into what's going to happen. So if people get completely shocked and surprised, it's a very different scenario than if people can see what's coming, which gives an indirect form of control.
Great. So how can someone prepare for change so that they can be more resilient to it?
I brought a job aid. There are four key points in my book about how people can prepare for change. So I'm going to differentiate between preparing for change in general, which is whatever change might come along, and preparing for a specific change. So let me talk about the general first. We can prepare for a change for changes by learning to calm ourselves, by learning to choose good strategies around how we deal with the change, by strengthening our resilience muscles, which we can talk about in a little bit more. You and I have talked about those also on a previous show, and by building and replenishing our energy. So we can, all of those things we can do to prepare for changes in general. We can prepare for specific change by learning more about it, by understanding what kinds of energy it's going to take and how much. Is this a change that's going to be physically demanding? Is it going to be mentally demanding? Is it going to require us to deal with tough emotions? Is it going to cause us to question our place in the universe or our sense of meaning and purpose? All of those things can lead us to develop some strategies to make sure that we have the energy that we need, and then to figure out what our best approaches are going to be, and you know, and what's going to be most helpful. So I would say the more we know about a change, the more we can prepare for that specific change.
Okay. So there are ways that we can prepare to change, prepare for change in general, and then also mm-hmm. for specific changes. That's an interesting thought there.
Yeah.
So you mentioned some strategies for dealing with change and challenges. Sure. What are some of those strategies?
I would say there are three basic strategies, and they all have many variations. Strategy one is figure out how to reframe it. Can I take this challenge and see it as an opportunity? Now, that sounds like a dumb party trick, but it's not. Because, I mean, even performers on stage who have, you know, some of the most experienced musicians and actors in the world get stage fright before they go on stage. But many of them have learned to reinterpret that as the adrenaline rush that comes with being excited about getting out there and performing. So they've taken something that keeps many people from doing it and just figured out how to reinterpret it in a way that doesn't feel so awful. I'll give you one more story. I have a friend who, with his wife, uses traffic annoyances as a deliberate chance to practice patience and practice loving kindness, meditation kinds of things. So if somebody cuts them off in traffic, they think, what's a story I might be able to tell that would help me understand why this person might be doing this? So if we can reframe a change as a challenge, as an exciting opportunity, that's the first strategy because it makes everything else easier. But that doesn't always work. You know, you just got laid off from your job. Maybe you can turn it into an opportunity, but it's going to take a while. So the other two strategies are, one, figuring out how to change the situation. What can we do to influence or change what's happening around us? And then the other strategy is, how do we figure out how to accept what's going on and build a new model of reality that incorporates whatever the new information or data is? We usually go back and forth between all of those, but those are the fundamental strategy. And then within those, you know, those look different in every situation.
Okay. So just to reiterate what those three are, one was reframing.
Reframing.
Yeah.
Changing the situation, okay. And then accepting what is.
Accepting what is. So it goes along the lines of, you know, that God give me the patience to.
Yes.
Right. It's the same idea with dealing with change and building resilience. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I will say that you can overuse any of those strategies. If you try to change reality in every situation, you're going to be banging your head against a lot of walls. If you try to accept what is instead of standing up for things sometimes, you're going to be a pushover. And, you know, so you really do have to figure out what's going to work best here.
Do you have any advice for choosing which one to use?
I would say start with reframing if you can.
Yeah.
You know, if you can reframe it, that's great. If you can't, then figure out, is this a battle I need to fight? You know, is this important to me to put the energy into changing reality? How much influence and control do I have here? Is it worth the effort? I mean, there are people who will take on and try to change reality around some very, very difficult things because they're very important to that person.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so it becomes a matter of values and priorities in terms of where you're going to sink your energy into try to change situations that are not pleasing to you.
Okay. Now, are there some that come more naturally to some people than others? I'm just curious.
Oh, sure. I mean, you probably know people who, you know, anything you throw at them, they've got to solve the problem, right?
Yeah.
Instead of figuring out, okay, how do I just roll with this? You mentioned that I'm a sailor. I crew on a small sailboat for some races up on Lake Lanier. And we have conversations like that all the time. you know, getting frustrated about the weather or about the wind or about whatever. And it's like, you know, you just kind of have to go with the wind you've got. And so, but my, the guy who skippers the boat that I sail on is an ex-Special Forces, Vietnam Ranger, you know, whatever. He wants to change everything. You know, he really wants to be able to change the situation wherever he can. And sometimes rolling with what is takes a little bit more energy and effort.
Okay. So, well, how can someone better understand their own relationship with change and resilience and what their reactions are going to be?
Well, I do believe that we each have some characteristic styles and approaches. And I would say that there's probably three things someone could do if they want to get more skillful at understanding their own responses to change. One is to just start to pay attention. Keep a little journal, keep some notes, observe yourself. And so notice how you're responding when something happens. When you get that flat tire on your car, what's your first reaction? When someone cuts you off in traffic, what do you do? When a clerk is rude to you in a store, when your child comes home with a low grade on the report card, you know, whatever it is, just notice what's happening. The second thing would be to ask other people, because other people often have keener insight to us than we do into ourselves. And so I would say, ask people if they notice any patterns. How do you see me responding to change? And then the third thing is there are some data points that you can get. For instance, we have a tool called the Personal Resilience Profile that helps people understand the resilience muscles most readily to them during change and which ones are that they bring later into the mix.
Okay. Well, you mentioned those change muscles, and I know we've talked about that those on the show before, but just really quickly, what are some of those change muscles that people can build?
So there's a set of seven change muscles, and they help us solve many of the problems that we face during change. The first one is positivity, being positive about the world around us and being able to spot opportunities and hope in unfamiliar or difficult situations. The second one is confidence. So being positive about ourselves and having that understanding of our own capabilities to wade into challenges, to step in there and get things done. The third one is priorities, a sense of focus around what's most important to us. Because when we are in the midst of change, in the midst of ambiguity, oftentimes there are many, many things that are competing for our attention. And the more we use our energy to pay attention to the most important things, the better off we're going to be. Then, once we've engaged our energy with those first two and then focused it, then the next muscle is about creativity and flexible thinking and the ability to think of many ways to approach the situation, to come up with creative opportunities and options instead of just trying to solve things the same way we've always done them. Related to that, there's a connections muscle. Has to do with how we open up options by reaching out to others, being flexible in our social world, because many times other people have physical, mental, emotional, spiritual energy that we can bring in to the situation, whether it's a hug or an idea or whatever it might be, they can provide some resources that are helpful. And so there's a muscle around being able to reach out to other people and ask them for support. The next one is structure or organization, which is a little counterintuitive sometimes, but basically, if we're thinking about how we're using our energy during change, there are things that are predictable. There are things that are systematic and that we can put structures and processes and plans in place for so that our energy is freed up to deal with the unusual and the unpredictable and all that. So there's that sort of structure muscle. And then the last one is proactive or experimenting. So that's that getting out there, getting out of our comfort zone, being willing to risk make a fool of ourselves, try new things, experiment, learn from experiments. That's that kind of fail fast, fail forward idea. So all the way from how we engage our emotions and how we reach out to other people and how we plan, those make a set of muscles that people can draw on when they're dealing with change and other kinds of challenges.
Great. So a lot of things that people can work on to build up their ability to bounce back and to deal with change. That's great.
Absolutely. And one of the things I would say is that people sometimes talk about resilience as though it's a trait. I don't believe that. I believe we all have these muscles within us, just like our physical muscles. Some of them have stronger ones than others, and some have strengthened them more than others. But I believe we all have the seeds of resilience inside us. And so a lot of it is about practice. A lot of it's about continuing to strengthen and build.
Just knowing what to do next.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
That's great. So again, you know, this show is for people who are implementing change in their organizations. And we've talked a lot about people who are I hate to say targets of change, but the people who are going through change. And so I wanted mm-hmm. to talk a little bit about, as change agents, when we are implementing change that's going to affect other people, which, you know, what change doesn't affect other people? Yeah. You know, how do we make sure that people aren't getting blindsided? Or, you know, how do we help other people be pro-zilient, but also resilient?
Sure. So a couple of things. One, sometimes we need to apply first aid. So sometimes we realize that we've blindsided people with change, and we need to sort of help people dig out of that place of being. So one of the things I would say there is, the first thing to do if you or anybody else is blindsided by change is to just stop and breathe. Because when we are feeling that reaction of being overwhelmed, our bodies, there's a lot of chemicals that are active in our bodies. And one of the things that we know is that chemical reaction and process takes a little while to clear from our system. So the first guideline is you or anybody that you're working with, get them to just wait 90 seconds and breathe. Because that's about how long it takes for the adrenaline rush to clear the body, unless you're keeping it going in your head. And then help people get a realistic picture of what they're facing. So I would say one of the things that change agents can be more sensitive to than I think many of us are trained to be is looking at energy. Looking at the energy demands of the change and looking at where people's energy is. I did a blog series on how organizations can create systems and structures that support what I call human energy sustainability. So how do we sustain and support people's physical energy? You know, are we feeding people, you know, bagels at meetings, or are we feeding them something that's got a little protein and, you know, whatever, so that we're taking, you know, first, you know, starting to take care of physical energy? What are we doing to support their mental energy, their emotional energy, their spiritual energy? And I think as a change agent, you can evaluate a change and guess or predict how much energy it's going to take from people. We don't often think about the fact that if we're asking people to work long hours to deal with some particular kind of thing, that it may be messing with their sleep, it may be messing with their exercise schedule. You know, and so we need to start to think about what can we do to help people rebuild the energy that is being drained by this change. But I would say, in addition to that, listen. You know, so once people you've helped them get to a calmer place by maybe even showing them some techniques for calming down, which could include breathing, getting outside, getting some comforting touch from someone in the form of maybe a hug. I know some organizations have timeout rooms or meditation rooms. Yeah. So, you know, making sure that you're providing the wherewithal for people to calm them down so that they can start to draw on their own resources. I don't think it's our job to fix people or to, but it's our job to help them access the resources that they have and provide them with some additional skills and knowledge. So I'd say after we help them calm down, listen to them, understand what their concerns are, figure out where are the energy drains coming for them, what's feeling hard and difficult to them, and then give them control where we can. Figure out how do we engage and include people, what do they have choices about, you know, how do we help them see the places where they have control. And then I would say be honest with them. I think people deal better with the reality of what they're facing, even if they don't like it.
Yeah.
Than they do feeling like somebody's not telling them the truth or feeling like they're being kept in the dark.
Great. Well, and do you have any tips for not blindsiding people in the first place? I mean, I know that's sort of the idea of change management in general.
Yep.
But, you know, sometimes I've had conversations where, you know, people feel like they've done as much as possible to communicate change and everything to not blindside people. And there are some people that still feel like they're blindsided. And so I'm just wondering if you have any tips for avoiding that.
I think the best thing, well, I'd say two things. One of them's just plain tactical, which is understand where they get their information. I think a lot of times, you know, we send out an email or we, you know, whatever, and somehow they're not tuned into that channel. You know, we haven't done our work in figuring out how do they hear things? You know, where are they going to pick up the information most usefully? But I would say the other thing is figure out how to put yourselves in their heads. You know, I think one of the best skills a change agent can have is empathy, to figure out how it feels to sit where somebody else sits and understand what they're doing. You know, mapping out the different stakeholder target groups and really understanding what about this change is going to be disruptive for this group. Yeah. It may not be the things that we think. And so the more we can get our heads around, you know, what actually is going to be the disruptive part of this change, and understand it from their frame of reference, I think the better we're going to be at anticipating how people are going to react. The other thing I would say is include them early. You know, get people involved. I recently participated in a class on David Cooper Ryder's positive change model, which is based on the appreciative inquiry approach. And one of his axioms is communicating for buy-in is one of the worst ideas of all time. What you do is you need to engage and involve for buy-in. And so if we think that we're going to figure everything else, you know, he talks about 6 or 8 people in a room planning everything and then it out to people, and how that compares to what happens when we get 6 or 8 people who are involved in figuring out how do we engage, how do we involve, how do we bring people into the process and keep our changes in beta as long as we can and try things and test things and pilot things. You know, I think that's really a paradigm shift that I know for me is very important.
Great. So where can people contact you and learn more, and where can they find your book?
Okay, so my business website is resiliencealliance.com, and I'm Linda at resiliencealliance.com. My book is on Amazon. It's called ProZilience, and it's kind of a blend of proactive and resilience. It's about how we intentionally build our resilience. That's out there. There's also a ProZilience.com website, which is really more for people who want to learn for themselves. It's the Resilience Alliance one is much more for the change agents and change leaders and people who want to understand what to do in their organizations. But ProZilience is just resources and information for people that they can use for free. And I'd say that those are probably the main ways to contact me. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we even have a ProZilience Instagram feed. A whole new world for me. But just figuring out how do we find images that reflect this notion of building our strength to deal with change.
Right.
And the last thought I want to leave people with is I want to invite you to see the world as your resilience gym. I want you to see that all the challenges that you face, all the little challenges, are a great place to do the bicep curl, the push-up, the whatever it is, to strengthen your muscles for resilience. Think about traffic as resilience practice. So I'll leave you with that thought.
All those people who are listening to this on their commute are thinking, I better start right now.
Well, you know, Atlanta had this whole grid fire thing on, and everybody got a lot of resilience practice in figuring out how to deal with that.
Yeah, we definitely did. Great. Well, Linda, thanks so much for being here on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I hope that people find this useful, and thank you very much for inviting me.
Great. And thank you for listening to the Influence Change at Work show. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events, please visit inclaria.com. While you're there, sign up for the monthly newsletter and you'll receive a free change readiness assessment to find out if your change initiative is set up for success. Until next time, best wishes on your change initiative.